Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Burlesque Podcast. We are still at the 20th annual, now we have to go to the Burlesque Hall of Fame, Striptease and Reunion.
And it's the 57th reunion?
I think it's the 50-something.
Yeah, 50-something, which is actually a nicer way of putting it.
Right.
Think about it.
Let's not be too specific.
Yeah, we don't want any wrinkles in the actual the face of the show.
It would actually be very funny if they actually put one of the older photos on that.
It'd be like the Dorian Gray,
awesome.
Which ties to last
that
night.
That was an incredible number. I was like, oh no, there's a slideshow.
Oh, no.
I'm one of those
number,
people
yeah,
that it's like
brilliant.
Props and things like that. I usually, because they're so underused normally, people don't know how to use them.
They have a prop on stage and they don't use it, yeah.
One of my biggest pet peeves right after not cutting the tags out of your goddamn
clothing.
I
hate it when people don't cut the tags out. I mean, I'm guilty on occasion, but.
Please welcome Joe Boobs Weldon. Yay!
Hooray!
Published author, amazing performer, all around inspiration in burlesque for so many women coming up. It is amazing to me. You are sought out probably as much as the legends.
Oh, thank you.
I mean,
my God.
Chris and I were talking about a new category called Neo Legend, which is eventually the second half of the show, usually on Friday nights.
Yeah.
But truly, you have been doing this not long enough to be old, but long enough to definitely be considered one of the strongest forces in the burlesque scene coming up. And I mean, if that is not evident anywhere, it's evident in the first few pages of your amazing new book, The Burlesque Handbook. Kudos to you. A round of applause.
Hooray.
Thank you. Yay.
And I want to say, actually,
it's out.
This thing, I haven't read the thing, obviously. I just bought it from you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for signing it. But I could already tell, like, just the fact that it says first printing and knowing, like, this isn't going to be the only printing. I could just tell. I mean, this thing is, I'm a designer. I'm a nerd.
I love my designer.
You have good design. Thank you.
The
cover
Paula
is beautiful.
Beautiful.
The style is book. Paul, what is his last
Paula
name? Paula.
Fransky.
Paula, mm-hmm. Say it again.
It's in the book.
I know, but they can't read it.
Paula Sfransky.
Sfransky, okay. The design of the book, everything in it is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, the content.
Yay, I'm glad you like it.
How long has it taken you to write this book, Joe?
Parts of it were written, you know, because I've been running the School of Burlesque for like 6 or 7 years and doing handouts and instructions. And there was a little handbook that was about 40 pages long. So that part, even though it's been changed since then, is about 6 years old. And then I got the book deal in November of 2008.
Yeah.
So it's been in development seriously for 2 years.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it was worth every minute. Every minute of the wait was absolutely worth it.
Thank you.
The comprehensive knowledge that you have of the history of burlesque, which is amazing how you start out the book right with your introduction, which, why don't you give us a few minutes of how you got into this?
I did do the introduction a little bit about my own history because I wanted people that were coming to burlesque to think about their history. So it wasn't just about me, but about people thinking about why are you interested in this?
Yeah.
And I got interested in it when I was a little kid because I saw pictures of what we now, the legends that we now know, like Tempest Storm. And of course, I didn't know her name, but you know, when we come to the Burlesque Hall of Fame, it's the very women that I saw in those photos, not their contemporaries, not women kind of like them, the very women whose photos I was looking at. And, you know, in the 60s and 70s, those women, you know, burlesque was considered kind of outdated and kind of cheesy and, you know, not hip. But there was a fierceness in them. I just knew they didn't have easy lives. I knew they were kind of outlaws. Even if they were women who would rather have led more domestic lives, I knew that they were, you know, there's something about them. Like, I know other people are inspired by like MGM musicals and this, that, and the other. And I love that stuff, but it's that outlaw energy, what I call the undomesticated women, that moved me. And I felt like they were more individual. I didn't feel like they were entirely groomed. I felt like they created themselves a little bit. And I know that sounds like a lot to read in, and I have the benefit of hindsight now. But why was I attracted to the strippers and not the movie stars? You know, I was attracted to specifically them.
They were real.
I believed that they had something to do with their own personas. I believed that they weren't entirely acting.
There, you know, the new burlesque film is coming out with Christina Aguilera and Cher, and there's a lot of talk about it. And I'm like, I believe that there's going to be elements of that film that are very true, because in every film that is way. But exactly what you're saying is these women were real. You could tell they were real. They weren't told, show up and wear this costume. They weren't told. They figured it out on their own. And that is a very strong, as you say, a strong, fierce thing. How did you first get on the stage?
When I was a kid, I was going to Rocky Horror, and they had a pre-show.
Well, kind of.
Yeah. Well, in the 70s, you know, it was just kind of getting going.
Yeah.
And they had a pre-show that was like drag and neo circus, so they didn't call it that. But you know, there were jugglers and drag queens and all that kind of thing, and it was like the late 70s, and so I was into like punk rock and new wave and also very into Dean Martin and that whole aesthetic. And I wanted to do my own striptease. I was still in high school and they didn't know I was underage.
I love it.
Yeah. And so I created this character, Prunella Dubois, the most conceited woman you ever saw, who would stand up and recite these terrible lyrics while I'm dressing. And
you talk
well
about
now
this
we
in
have
the books.
To see this
it's
again
wonderful.
Someday.
Yeah.
Do you do that character ever anymore?
No, I haven't done it since then. But we actually did all these photo shoots where I was dressed up as Prunella Dubois, and we would go into stores, and I would put on clothing in the store, and we would shoot in the dressing rooms of the stores.
That's hysterical.
I was like 16.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I didn't know what I was doing. And one time we invited the entire football team from my school, and they all came, and they were like, "Why did you invite us to see a strip?" I'm like, "I'm dancing. I'm performing," and they weren't entirely negative about it, but there was, you know, they were like, "You're colorful."
It actually puts you more, yeah, you have more in common with some of the legends than other people have. I mean, if you're stripping at 16.
Yeah, because a lot of them started out as teenagers. Yeah. More out of necessity. I mean, I was driven. I had a necessity when I was working in strip joints in my later teen years. I was working out of necessity, but I was also working because I thought it would be glamorous.
You talk about that in the book, and it was written so beautifully. It made me cry, not tears of sadness, like, oh, here's a little girl who ran away from her home because her dad touched her. I mean, it was really, and not that your dad touched you. I have no idea.
Or that he didn't. Who knows?
But do you know what I'm saying? There's always this legend of how strip performers perform because they have inappropriate sexual responses. Some of them
even
do it because
if it's true, people use that so that they can say, okay, here's an explanation for your behavior, we're done talking about you now.
Absolutely.
Like, okay, we've summed you up, we're done. And I don't like it when people define people by the damage that they've experienced. You know, okay, oh, you're damaged, we're done, we know everything we need to know about you.
The story for you running away to become glamorous at a strip club made me cry because I was like, that is so beautiful.
It worked.
She's following her dream, and B, it worked. Yeah.
It worked.
it absolutely worked. You talk quite a bit about how you worked there because the money was great.
The money was good.
Yeah.
It was as good as it gets for inexperienced labor with a job you can get in one day.
It's really funny. I walked into a strip club to pick up one of my friends, and I was on my feather crutches, and I walked up to the bartender, and I go, you know, is so-and-so here? And she's like, thank God. I really thought you were going to say, can I audition? And I was just like, really?
I've totally seen that, and I would tip you if you were dancing with feathered crutches.
Well,
and I would not be the only one.
I was coined a stripple by a friend of mine, and I have my own shirt, and it's a girl on a pole in a cast with her crutch hanging out, and it's one of the most brilliant pieces of art I've ever seen. It made me laugh really hard.
Available
at MikeSchmidtComedy.com. You can get the stripple shirt there. But there is that where you don't realize that, but that is like, it's like going in and getting a job as a prep for a chef. You don't know that it will actually lead somewhere, but you can get hired in a day.
You get hired in a day. I mean, I'm always talking to people about, you know, because I used to be a sex workers' rights activist, and I'm still an advocate, but I don't have time to be an activist and keep up to date on all the current research. And
I applaud you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I always feel like, oh, I don't feel like I do it that much anymore. But the interesting thing about it that they never talked about, and when I was an activist, they talk about it more now, was the threshold of entry. Like, you get a job, you can pay your bill the next day, and there is no substitute for that. And I remember someone saying to me when I was 19 and I was stripping, they're like, wouldn't you rather be a lawyer? I'm like, a 19-year-old lawyer? It's possible, but is that what you're asking me? Should I be a lawyer at 19 and not a stripper? Like, people are really aggressively like, wouldn't you rather be a... And I was like, I did go into stripping from a rather challenging financial situation. I didn't you know, I was.
And how much fun does a 19-year-old lawyer have?
That's very true.
I don't know. I think lawyers do okay.
Yeah, you know, fun.
But again, they don't. Lawyer does not happen overnight.
It doesn't happen overnight. And it doesn't happen cheaply. I mean, obviously, strip joints aren't for everybody. And I'm lucky that, you know, I had that kind of resilient nature and a willingness to, at the time, drink enormous amounts of liquor with people. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's not for everybody. And it's probably for a minority of people. But it was a good place for me.
You talk in your book about how you walked in there expecting to do burlesque and realized, yeah, that wasn't just going to be accepted right away.
No. And when I did do burlesque, it was as a feature dancer.
Yeah. And that was an interesting time. I talked to Torchy briefly mm-hmm. because I know you and she
went to college together.
In Atlanta is where you actually ended mm-hmm. up stepping on stage, I believe. You weren't stripping before you got to the
I did a couple of nights in a club in Denver because I'm from Denver.
Oh, and, I know that.
Yeah, and I just didn't hang. I got distracted. And then I went out on road with a mag crew. Do you know what a mag crew is?
No.
Did you read the movie? Did you read the movie? Can you tell?
I did, actually. I'm from L.A. I read movies. We don't read books.
Did you ever read the book Attic? It's by the woman who wrote Geek Love.
I've heard of it, but I have not read it.
I can't believe the name of the author of Geek Love right now. It's one of my favorite books. But anyway, so she wrote a book called Attic, and it's about mag crew, and it's actually kind of a cult, and there's, you know, internet websites. God, I'm sleepy. websites devoted to telling people don't go on mag crew because it's kind of like white slavery. And I went out on that, and then I was like, I think I'd rather be a stripper. Mm-hmm. So you can
look up
mag crew. I mean, the company that I worked for was actually closed down after investigations for white slavery.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I just, like, went stripping. That was, you know, excellent.
I have to tell you, in the 80s, I owned a spa, and I catered to strippers.
Mm-hmm. I remember
we
you talking
We would go
about that,
into yeah. the clubs, and we would do bikini waxes on site. We would do nails on site. I mean, we had a mobile crew that would go out and do that. And, I mean, these are not dumb women. Some of them are really stupid, but you have that in any.
It's a cross-section of women. You got everything. And I actually was, in many ways, like, you know, when I was young, I was a stereotypical problematic stripper. Like, I was a problem child. I had no redeeming qualities. When I was a teenage stripper, I was, like, every stereotype of, like I run into people every now and then, and they're like, oh, I thought you would have been dead by now.
Oh.
I say, yeah, well, thanks for that. And I don't blame you.
You are an incredibly smart woman. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Just reading your writing style, you can tell that. Unless you had someone ghostwrite this for you and you have the best secret held in burlesque.
I wish.
Going into the education of it, what was the driving force for you to say there's a need for this, or there's a desire to share this, or was there enough money in it that you were like, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that there is.
Mm-mm. People ask me, because, you know, I had a website called gstringsforever.com, and I've been on the internet since the 80s.
Yep.
And, you know, using, Usenet groups, that type of thing. And so when I started working in burlesque, originally I heard a lot of offensive comments about strippers. So I've started a website about entrepreneurial and activist strippers that I knew, which was G-Strings Forever. And then all these people didn't know what burlesque was. And I was like very frustrated. So I started talking about burlesque. And every time I found a newspaper article, I posted it. It was kind of like a blog, except there wasn't blogging technology. And I had a digital camera. It was like one of the first, you know, digital.
Afforded by stripping?
Some of those photos from that site.
This is a collectible digital camera.
Yeah.
It's an Olympus 4040C. Rocks.
You're so adorable.
Well, you know, it's not like the high end one.
There's nothing better than smart, beautiful women. It's inspiring. It's awesome.
It wasn't the high end one, but it was a good camera, and I was able to take pictures of burlesque and post them online. And there wasn't Flickr or anything. You know, whatever the equivalent of Flickr will be 2 years from now. Like, it was.
It cost a lot of money to host those photos back when.
Yeah, right. And I was paying for all my own bandwidth and everything, and so it was. You know, I had this website, and people started thinking of me as a teacher because of that, and because I was lecturing in universities, talking about stripping and burlesque and sex work, and doing mostly like women's studies related things because I was working on trafficking issues and that kind of thing. So I had sort of a reputation as a semi-academic And then people started asking me to teach.
Maybe it was lectures that made them think that.
Yeah, it might have been the lectures.
Well, but I mean, when I think of someone who's an academic, I think of someone who lives the academic lifestyle and has the discipline to get a PhD, not someone who speaks on
we
panels.
Always think of everyone else but ourselves.
Academic is a career choice. Yeah.
Some of the best intellectuals I know never went to college.
Oh, I went to college.
They are well read.
I just don't remember it.
Well, yeah, but they are well read and very well educated on the streets. And you know, I mean, my dad never went to college, but made his first million when he was 29 years old.
Well, that's how my dad is. Yeah. My dad was an entrepreneur, and he taught me a lot about entrepreneurialism and that kind of thing. And so I've always been really into that. And also, I got a business degree and I did my graduate work in media ethics and was, you know, studying all these, like the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics. I was really fascinated by that. And it's also an interesting code of ethics because it related to sex work, where I was talking publicly about sex work because it talks about how people who have access to resources have different rights than people who don't. So the sex workers who didn't necessarily have constant access to the press, like certain legislators, mm-hmm. should be handled differently by the press. So I thought about that kind of thing a lot. And so in that sense, you know, I was reading a lot of academic research and that kind of thing, but I didn't have a discipline program.
So I understand that.
So I did graduate work in media ethics, but I didn't complete a PhD in it. That's probably way more information about my college education.
No, it's wonderful because being a published author now takes you to another level of that as well, because there are a lot of people who are in academics that would give their right arm to get published that still haven't been able to do it. So, I mean, you've accomplished more in your lifetime than a lot of people I know. That are supposedly the people who know everything. Do you know what I'm saying? Did that come out right?
I like the
Did
sound
I make any
of it.
Sense?
I
mean, I like
the
sound
of
it at all.
Yeah. Okay.
The School of Burlesque.
Okay.
The School of Burlesque.
The School of Burlesque.
You have several teachers that work with you. It's not just you.
It's fantastic.
You have some incredible teachers that work with you.
I really wanted to talk more about the School of Burlesque in the book, but I tried to keep it, you know, organized so it was about how to put together an act. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, World Famous Bob teaches self-confidence classes that I keep hoping that she'll write her book about that. And about her life and the kind of stories that she tells and the confidence program. And then I'm really, really fortunate to have also Dr. Lucky teaches act development, and she has a great academic approach that's really, really rare in burlesque, and it's a great gift. And then my core teachers, Darlinda and Gal Friday, both came in with a lot of experience. And like Darlinda had all this experience with performance art and improv, and Gal Friday had a lot of theater experience. And they brought it to burlesque and just sort of layered that over it. And I always think of burlesque as something that's layered, you know, because in a strip joint, you do have striptease. You do that. Yeah. But it's not layered with all this elaborate costuming and themes and other skills and props. You know, it's very straightforward. Yeah. So I've had teachers who've definitely brought that to the table. I'm so lucky. And then I have guest teachers of Dirty Martini and Julie Atlas Muse and World Famous Bob. I can't believe the people that work for me on a regular basis. So,
it's
or work with
tool.
Me, I should say, because they create the classes themselves. I don't hire them to do stuff. It's a collective.
How many students graduate in a year through your? How are your programs set up? I know you have you have the individual classes, but you also teach basics. I mean, you teach the here's a group of girls, and my understanding is they all learn the same routine. Correct?
Probably about 1,000 people a year learn the classic moves routine through us and through teachers affiliated with us in other cities. So we're always looking for teachers in other cities that want to share resources so that, you know, we'll promote classes, their classes, they promote ours, and we teach them how to do our classic moves routine, and they teach it in their city, and then they have NYSB endorsement, and we do something
for them in
turn.
How many cities are you in now? I know you're in Seattle,
I don't know.
Correct?
Well, in Seattle, I actually have a co-partnership
with
The Academy of Burlesque run by Indigo Blue, who actually started teaching before I did, like probably a year or two before I did.
Very
and has
cool.
helped me a lot. Indigo has helped me.
Another amazing performer.
Yeah.
Her performance.
Tribute.
I've always thought she was amazingly sexy. I've always thought she was wonderful on stage. Her Wonder Woman routine made me cry. I mean, it was just beautiful.
That.
But I walked up to her yesterday, and I was just like, I was so completely wet after you performed.
Right?
I have never been so turned on by you. I always.
But now you're sounding like a lawyer,
so
Lily.
Hot.
Right?
But I mean, I walked away from that number just going, "Fuck, I can die now." I mean, it was.
She's brilliant. Oh. Indigo's brilliant.
Oh.
And the Seattle scene, in my opinion, is one of the most developed burlesque scenes in the country.
Do you think that's because they started so long ago that they've managed,
yeah.
or do you think it's just the creative? The creative juices.
Well, in Seattle, there's one thing about Seattle that's kind of like New York, which is that the subcultures, a lot of them are really interested in process, where in a lot of cities, they're not interested in seeing something until it's fully developed. Like on Broadway, you don't put something on Broadway until it's 100% developed, whereas in, you know, New York downtown theater and cabaret, they're interested in a work in progress. And they love the high energy and risk of an experimental piece.
Yeah.
So I think they have some of that in Seattle as well. And burlesque has been developing. It hasn't been like there weren't you couldn't teach it. It wasn't developed.
Well, there wasn't a lot. There wasn't a lot written.
No, but there wasn't really a scene to write about. Like I was thinking about 5 years ago, I was watching the first generation of performers who'd been influenced by neo burlesque instead of by all these other schools of theater and performance.
That's a good point. Now, you were at the first Teaserama or not?
No, during the first Teaserama, I was at the Sex Workers Film Festival with Arochica Bamboo in San Francisco.
Awesome. I was going to bring up the fact that you did a lot of work with the Sex Workers Tour, which was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. That was
and still is. You're not out with them as much anymore when they do stuff?
The Sex Workers Art Show Tour was run by a lady who is currently Beth Ditto's tour manager.
That would be
Annie Oakley. She's currently Beth Ditto's tour manager and is just a little preoccupied. So she hasn't planned a tour for the next year.
That's a shame because it was amazing. I mean, every write-up that you would read about it, people walked away going, everything I knew was wrong. I mean, it was beautiful.
I felt that way when I was in it. Like, I remember it was my first experience. I had an experience like the year before I did that where I came to the Burlesque Hall of Fame weekend and my students were there and the legends were there. So it was like my students and my teachers. I was like, this is the definition of being a middle-aged stripper, right? And then I went on the Sex Workers Art Show tour and I met college students and a lot of them were queer or, you know, somehow othered, you know, and they came up to us and they were so excited that we were proud to be weird, proud to be other. And also, you know, willing to demand to be integrated, not be discriminated against, even though we were, you know, open about something that, especially around sexuality. And it was the first time I had ever encountered that. I'd never had that experience before. And it was the first time I realized that I was kind of an adult, you know, among other things. But it was the first time that I realized that, you know, this show that Annie put together had that kind of influence because she'd been doing it a long time where people felt inspired to be more themselves because of it. And I don't feel like my work in particular does that, but I felt like the cumulative effect of the show was that it was really amazing.
I believe your work does. I mean, if you have 1,000 people coming through your school, they're not all going to go on and be burlesque dancers.
Oh, no. Most people are doing it for fun. Yeah.
They're doing it for self-discovery the same way they might take a pottery class. And to me, it sounds absurd, but God damn it, I'm really happy they're taking a stripping class as opposed to a pottery class because...
I love it.
Women, you know, when I love Britney Spears, don't get me wrong, but watching her walk around in a shirt with her, in a skirt with her crotch showing and calling that talent was really starting to annoy me and calling that sexy was really starting to annoy me.
I get a kick out of her.
But unfortunately...
I don't know if fan is the right word, but...
I love her, don't get me wrong.
Oh, I know.
But again, I love her in the sense that she's a talented train wreck in a
sense.
Yeah,
which is...
There's a spectacle.
But see, like, I had a moment not too long ago, it's a year or two ago, where I was looking at a photo of Lindsay Lohan on the cover of The Enquirer, and she's passed out in the back of a limo with a crust of cocaine around her nose, and she was the age that I was where I had to say, oh, sister. I was like, I am you. You are me. Like, I could not be more like... At that age, I was identical. I was a train wreck. I always say I had no redeeming qualities. People keep walking up to me saying, I thought you were dead. It happens to me all the time when I go back home.
In the back of limos.
Yeah, in the back of limos, literally with cocaine around my nose.
We all, I shouldn't say we all, some of us have gone through that.
Figure.
Some of us have had those phases.
I was a Lindsay Lohan type. I had that.
But you weren't a role model at the time.
No.
And I think
I hope not.
I think this is the point I'm trying to make about that. We all are train wrecks at times, and we all have to go through what we go through to become a better person. But we were showing an entire generation that you don't have to be talented, you just have to be a spectacle, and that can be enough sometimes. And I think it's not.
I will say this, though, because I think, like, you know, when you listen to people talk about Lindsay Lohan or Britney Spears when they were obviously breaking down, and people talk about them, they don't speak of them with admiration. So, I mean, if you say, like, oh, they're setting this example, I think that I don't.
It's like the opposite. So they're being, people
they're being
are happy
they're being talked
to see
of
them
in a
go,
very disparaging way. I don't remember ever hearing anybody say anything about them.
And yet I see the tragic side of it in L.A. I work with a lot of young girls who want to grow up and be Marilyn Monroe. And I constantly have to remind them, you realize she died of a drug overdose in a hotel in love with a married man, and her life was very tragic. And while that all sounds glamorous and beautiful, do you want to die at a young age in a hotel and live your life that way?
I don't define their life by that. I mean, also I am, like, I have to say, you know, I am someone who should be dead. You know, I mean, I don't want to talk about that too much. It's not that interesting in terms of burlesque.
I think you're too smart. Unfortunately,
no.
I'm
telling you, I was in the hospital with a needle in my chest, having them, and I come back. I go, oh my God, I thought I was dead, and they said we did too. They told my husband I was dead. I mean, I was that bad. So, I mean, for me, it's like that kind of anything can happen.
I guess. And maybe I'm a little too cynical. I guess I'm a little too cynical.
I don't. But that's the other thing. Like, a lot of people that I partied with didn't make it.
You know?
But a lot of them did. I mean, I didn't mean to get too much into this, but I just want to say that
the
I don't know.
The honesty is wonderful. I appreciate that.
I feel now, I'm in recovery. Okay, and I don't want to talk about that. Unless you want to talk about it, unless it's interesting to you.
It's interesting in the fact that to see someone that is such an inspiration and to say I've gone through so much is always an inspiration.
I mean,
that puts another level on how amazing you really are and how resilient you really are. And congratulations.
And so, I mean, when I look at somebody that's a train wreck, I don't identify with them where I am now, but I certainly felt an absolute 100% kinship with those train wrecks. Like, I have been that crazy and that messed up and that dangerous.
Yeah, there's times, I mean, I see things like that happen, even, you know, non-famous people, and I'm like, I wish I could help that person.
Yeah, I mean,
you can only do so much, though.
You can't tell people, and a lot of people don't make it.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't make it, but, for me, I never made a good choice that kept me alive. I just had good people around me. It's never like I was so much smarter. I survived. I just, the right people came to me at the right time. So it's, and that's part of what I think about with burlesque. Like, I see people who've been through some kind of trauma or some kind of identifying as a loser or someone with less opportunity. And they come in and they go, oh my God, I'm allowed to have fun. Because that's the thing.
Absolutely.
In our, if you watch like a show like Howard Stern and his interns are basically sitting there going, I don't think that woman is hot enough to be allowed to wear those pants or to talk to me or look at me or be in my presence. I don't even want to look at her. She's so hideous. And that isn't the majority of our society. But, your body is trained to remember dangerous things, not safe things. So when you hear a negative comment, it sticks with you as opposed to the positive comments because you don't have to fear people who make positive comments. Your body has to remember the negative comments. So you hear these negative things about women who don't look right and what they should and shouldn't be allowed to do, including walk into the room in an outfit that they consider inappropriate. Just be present. Just be physically present, looking like that. And then people come in and burlesque and say, I'm going to have fun. I don't need your permission. I don't need to be photogenic by your standards. I'm going to be glamorous and have a party and just be full of joy. And you can't tell me not to, because you wouldn't be sitting there judging me like that if you had joy in your life.
That's really love.
You summed that up in a way that was so eloquent.
Because nobody with joy in their heart sits there and goes, oh man, that chick is too fat for those pants. That's a comment that comes out of misery.
It's very true.
But I loved seeing that over this weekend, for example. Luckily, every weekend at the Burlesque Hall of Fame, All the different body types. I would never be allowed.
Oh, absolutely.
At times, and it's so
well, age, I think, is the biggest thing. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, like, there's, you know, the weight thing is really impressive to me, that people, you know, who have bodies that aren't, like, you know, what we called standard. in my day a hard body, where everybody mm-hmm. was aerobicized to death. Like, everybody just comes out and says, I am having fun in my body. But to see older women, and the one thing you're not supposed to do when you're older is take off your clothes, show your body yep. in public, and they're being applauded for it. And it's not ironic. It's just loving every minute of it, you know, watching them own
and
their
seeing it in their faces
thing. Like, yeah.
Happy
and
being up there and knowing that these people actually like them.
Absolutely.
Aren't like laughing at them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, porn produced for bachelor parties, you know, it's actually, people are actually enjoying it. It's yeah. So I feel, the age thing actually strikes me even more than the body type thing sometimes.
You just inspired me, because I actually was thinking, as of next year, I'm not going to take my top off anymore. Thank you.
No, I mean, but this is the thing. You don't have to stop. You know, society is ageist and sexist and looksist, but you don't have to let them dictate to you. You go, I'm going to have fun anyway. I'm not going to, you know, change the world by this, but I'm going to change yeah. my world. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to love life. I'm going to be around people that I like and feel pleasure.
You're right. As long as it's still fun, just keep doing it.
And be yeah. inappropriate. Be inappropriate. That is
that I have down.
Yeah.
That I don't have down is the good inappropriate.
But it doesn't mean you don't struggle with it. Yeah. Like, I still sometimes think, you know, because I stripped for so many years and it was so built into me. Like, you're over 30. Well, now I'm 47. You know, you're over 30. Put your frickin' clothes on. Put your clothes on. And I'm like, you know, I still struggle with it, but I don't make my decisions based on those feelings anymore. Does that make sense? Yeah, you don't have to stop feeling it. You just have to stop letting it rule your life.
Absolutely.
And as you can see, the lives are happening. Like, these people's lives are 100% happening 24 hours a day. For years now, this has been going on for over a decade.
The resurgence is amazing. I talked a little bit with Andy and Bart on another interview. Bart did a movie, Bart Williams did a movie about the last first comic, and they were talking about it, and we were talking about the comparisons of what's going on in the economy right now with what was going on in the economy during the heyday of burlesque and strippers, and how it was the affordable way, and everything old is new again, and the resurgence, and now the neo-burlesque performers that are now inspiring the next generation is an amazing thing.
And the
absolutely.
Wave of comics actually is really making me happy.
Really?
Yeah. Coming back, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I have gentlemen that come to our show saying, how do I learn how to do that? Where do I start? What is the... And it's great to see that books are being written about that now, and movies are being written about that as well.
I was so happy that my publisher, my editor, Rakesh Satyal, who also wrote this amazing book called Blue Boy, that's about a queer boy. Oh, this queer little boy is so lovable. but Rakesh also, he had hung out at the Slip Room. He had seen the kinds of burlesque that we do, and they weren't asking me to do How to Strip for Your Man or How to Get Fit.
Right.
Although I would be open to doing those books because I have strong feelings about those forms of striptease as well. But that they let me do a book that has men and transgendered and the older women and all the people that are part of the burlesque community, because originally it was supposed to be a book of me doing step by step. And I said, what if we have a bunch of quotes from other people? And they're like, fine. I was like, can I show some of these other people? Can we use some of my pictures? And they were like, sure. And then I said, can I describe the acts that aren't exactly showgirl? And of course, I had to describe my own acts because, you know, people don't really want you to describe the reveals of their acts. They want to go perform them.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I only talk about my own. But I describe a little bit of other people's as much as I felt I could get away with without revealing their entire acts. But they let me do that. They let me go talk about, you know, downtown style, you know, subculture, punk rock, rockabilly, you know, transgender. I mentioned Yoko Ono, and they loved that, you know, like that kind of thing that inspires us, as well as these legends of burlesque. So that they really let me talk about what I mean, it's not the only kind of burlesque there is, but they let me talk about the burlesque that I've seen at Teaserama and the Burlesque Hall of Fame events, where anybody can try anything. And it's what I was saying before about willing to look at a work in progress, willing to look at something experimental. And, you know, it has all the classic moves, but they
absolutely,
also
yeah.
let me talk about, you know, identity burlesque, like, you know, people who identify because of color or gender or body type. It was amazing that they They really encouraged me.
Again, I will say you should buy the book if you want to understand not only the technical side of what it takes to stripping, but to understand the psychological side of it. Because you do bring in everything that led to where you are right now that you're taking off your clothes. And that's just to recap what we've already talked about. It is so comprehensive in your history, history in general, and again, how all of that has come together right now. What do you see for the future?
Well, it's hard to say. I think that burlesque has gotten big enough that it's going to have factions, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people are, oh, burlesque is not a style of clothing. Well, it is now. You know, it's the usage of a word that determines the meaning. The dictionary is always behind the usage by the nature of dictionaries. So burlesque is going to be a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I'm what I'm seeing in New York is that a lot of the people that come out of my school go off and produce and develop their own shows, and they have their own distinct styles. There's one that's all classic, one that's all based on books, that's storybook burlesque. They're doing a actual burlesque show based on my book. They did one based on the Bible. They've done it on comic books and fairy tales, and they're really amazing. And so they are taking what they saw and doing it their way, and they're bringing a lot of popular culture into it. I see a lot of popular culture, and I think you know, it's definitely different than it was 10 years ago. And that's what gives me hope. If it was the same as it was 10 years ago, I would think it was dying out.
Yeah.
But it's different, so I feel like it's developing. I don't feel like it's trendy anymore. I feel like it's an actual development in the performing arts.
Yes, I am hoping that it does not do what swing did, which was become extremely popular and then just fall off the face of the earth and go back to less than I think it was in the beginning. People have a tendency to, it's all sold out now. I don't like my band anymore because they're playing stadiums rather than clubs. And they get that mentality.
I don't understand that at all. I was so happy for the Ramones when they started making money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Seriously. It's like
give my boys some money, man.
Money is not evil. You know, one of my dear friends is like, I want to quit my job and I want to do burlesque full time, but I don't know that I want to be a starving artist. And one of the best quotes I ever heard was, your day job is your tool to do what you love.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I like that.
Absolutely use that tool to get the money to do what you want to do. That was one of the things that I was really looking forward to asking you. I'm watching the LA scene explode because we have a couple schools there. Good schools. I'm very pleased with.
Yeah, I'm excited about them.
I produce a weekly show, which means I need a lot of bodies. You know, I've got 8 acts a week to fill, and I need to constantly have a variety in there because people do get bored seeing the same thing. And as a producer, my first thing is, what does the marketplace want? And I have to make sure that I feed that, or there is no place for people to perform and to experiment and to do the things and to get better and grow as a performer. And that's what I was curious is, I'm seeing that there's far more performers than there are performance spaces right now. Newer shows are coming up left and right where it's let's get together and put a show on, and they get all of their coworkers to come once, and then they can never produce another show again because they don't know how to market. They don't know how to figure out that if you have 99 seats at $10, you have this amount of money to pay your people. Those things they don't think about. They think about, hey, we're all going to get together and have a great time. Where are these people performing? Are they forming their own troops? Are they really going off to do?
We just lost the Slipper Room for a year. The Slipper Room is
so
6 months to a year. The Slipper Room's under renovation, and that's going to be a huge change in the burlesque community in New York. I mean, it's exciting, but it's sad. It's the end of an era. But people just go to venues. This is one of the big changes. If people say, oh, I don't get to perform that much. I only performed twice last week. I was like, man, we were performing twice a month 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? We were performing twice a month.
Yeah.
Now sometimes we're performing 6 times a week, you know, or someone who's really in demand. Like my roommate is Julie Atlas Muse. She performs almost every night. Not necessarily all burlesque. She does a lot of cabaret and theater as well. Yeah. But
is the scene in New York like it was back then? The vaudeville people were paid well. The burlesque people were still the, you know, a dollar for the night. Kind of
I
show.
Have heard from some of the circus people that that burlesque has made it harder for circus people to get paid, but I don't know if that's true.
Well, I fight with the girls all the time in LA, and I think I say it's wonderful that you want to perform. Do not perform for free.
I mentioned that in the book.
Yeah. And yeah, we had another reason I love you.
We had a show that went up against
well,
ours.
You know, it depends, though. I mean, we're doing it as a business. There's some people that are doing it for social reasons. Like, there are some shows that are developed as something that happens, you know, once a month where they and all their friends get together. You're talking about, it's not their business. And they're not going to have the same standards. And there's, you know, and when I say they're not going to have the same standards, I'm not complaining. I'm just observing. And I feel like people have been freaking out about every development in burlesque that I've seen come along, and it's just gotten bigger.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going to hurt burlesque or make it bigger. We don't know. And I have opinions about things. I see some things that I think, you know, make it harder or easier to get paid, or harder or easier to work with a venue, you know. But really, you know, 10 years ago, you had to go into a venue and explain to them why they wouldn't get busted for having you do it there. And now you don't. Now you can get a venue to hire you. And that could change, too. I mean, that could be legally fluid.
Yeah, legally fluid is the word. We're constantly worried about it in L.A. because we push the limits just being under boob in where they have liquor.
Yeah, right. And I mean, that's the case. Like, anytime it's a matter of enforcement, not legality. Yeah. If they're not enforcing the law, you're fine. But who knows? But I also, you know, when I was an activist, I started out as a First Amendment activist. So I dealt a lot with First Amendment applications to adult art, adult-oriented art, and adult-oriented entertainment. And so I'm like, arrest me. Let's see how that goes for you.
That sounds like you.
I've said it all the time.
I'll be a hero.
I tell every girl that is new in L.A., I say, you realize that you are technically breaking the law.
Yeah, but I would never risk a venue's license. I would, you know, I wouldn't take it upon myself to be a daredevil at their expense.
Absolutely not. But I say to every one of them, look, if you're a lawyer in the day and you're concerned about being photographed at the show, you may want to realize that the day they do decide to start enforcing this, you're going to be in the paper.
I tell people, so I tell people if they can't handle being outed at work, not to do it. Actually,
I say
that's your risk to accept. But their camera phones, what have you, we just can't control them. Good luck.
I have to tell you, I am a Nazi. I am a Nazi.
You know how it is in New York, though. I mean, you see the photos. You know we're photographed constantly.
I am very fortunate that I control my room. And from anywhere in my room, I can see everything. I will stop a show, grab a person's camera, bring them on the stage, and force them to delete every photo.
You're interviewing Johnny after this, right?
Yeah.
I talked to him about his photo policy.
Oh, good. This is going to be fun. Because I feel that I treat every girl that comes on our stage as though they are a star. And I'm like, I don't want you out there with a bad cell phone photo of you from the side, especially if you have a nipple slip or if your pantyhose move and stuff like that.
That's more about the venue, too.
And I, that is how I look at it at my venue, and I'm very proud of that. I love to do the other shows where it's a rock and roll concert and it's crazy and, it's, you know, you see all the camera phones. But I also go into that knowing that better make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah.
But sometimes I can control that and sometimes I can't. And sometimes I have mixed feelings about it. I could talk about just that, just photography policies for hours. I could talk about just that for hours. But I'll let you talk to Johnny about that.
Okay. This is going to be fun. I have something else to talk with him about.
Oh, yeah.
I have probably the most simple question here. How do you fit hundreds of dollars worth of information into a book that
sells,
is priced
at
$16.99?
get hired by HarperCollins.
There you go. Okay.
I still can't believe it. They've been so good to me. Yeah.
I am amazed at the price of that book.
That we specifically wanted to keep it affordable to students and have it be something people could put in their bags. The first book that we had out was proposal that we had out was for a coffee table book. And I was into it, you know, because I love the photographs I've been able to take backstage over the years. And I photograph less now because I have fewer opportunities to sit down and edit the photos. But I have to say, you know, I really wanted something that a student could use, and this is it. They met my price point that I requested. They gave the book the retro feel that I wanted, size and everything. I can't believe it. I can't believe how lucky I am.
It is.
I love the spine. That's my favorite part of the
book. The spine is amazing. it truly
my
is.
My favorite part of the book is the spine and the caption on the photo of Matt Fraser twirling tassels.
I don't remember it.
I've read the book cover to cover once, and I'm on my second round through.
I can't believe you're reading it twice. I'm so flattered.
Well, I stayed up all night. My boyfriend is actually like, you realize that you have to get ready to, you're performing tonight. I'm like, I'll have bags under my eyes. It's okay. I'm going to be a better performer just because I read this tonight. I read your book, and I'm like, I didn't realize how much I had forgotten. Because I have done so much research, I have done so much reading, I have tried to make sure that every opportunity that I have with a legend or someone that I respect, and for me, watching people perform is one of the easiest ways to learn. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Research by dissecting a performance
is
amazing. You
gotta go to shows, yeah.
We are very fortunate. I have every show taped on video, and every performer gets
like
a copy of it.
Wow.
And
that
I tell
them.
Awesome. I tell them the 5 minutes you spend reading or watching that video is more invaluable than performing that number 100 times because you get it from the audience perspective just once. You can go, wow, I thought that worked, and it doesn't.
They can't see it.
Yeah.
Well, one of the most interesting things to me is, like, people are always asking about the difference between performing in strip joints and performing in burlesque. And as a strip joint stripper, you have audience response rather than mirrors to go by.
Yeah.
So if something doesn't work and you don't get a dollar, you know it doesn't work.
That's very true.
As opposed to looking in the mirror and going, that looks right to me, you know. So, but definitely seeing things from the audience perspective, I think, is a huge help to people because, you know, you might think, oh, they couldn't read the writing on the card I held up. They couldn't tell that thing was blue. You know, things that you can only tell from an audience perspective or a workshop.
Knowing your stage is something that's amazing that's talked about of the, you know, how big is your stage? How big is your room? Is it a 3/4 room? Is it a 1/2 room? Are your pasties going to play to the back?
Yeah.
You know, those things are amazing.
Can they tell your pasties are shaped like cars?
Yeah. It's, you know, and if they can't tell in the 5th row, it's certainly not going to, yeah. Especially if you have small boobs, it's like you need to actually tape a truck there, I think.
Well, that's not
a
problem for you, Lily. I'm just sitting here enjoying the view.
I swear I want to change my tagline to the biggest pasties in burlesque. I thought that would be a funny line the other day. I was thinking of that. I'm like, that would be pretty fun. Because it is. It's, yeah. I can't put a small pasty on there, even if I wanted to, because it looks like I have an M&M stuck to my boob.
Oh, I don't look good in small pasties.
It's
I
so
think
funny
cute,
when
though.
You they're
I like
beautiful,
them on
yeah.
people that they look good on.
One of my dear friends, Lavender LaRue, literally 5 crystals.
Wow, I want to see that.
I hate her. You set her pasty on top of my pasty, and it's like, oh, look, now it's completed. It has the little pretty center. And we laugh all the time because she'll put my pasty on, and it covers her entire boob because she's such a petite little thing. I love the fact that you put pasty patterns in there. That was so cool.
Thank you.
That was amazing. I was like, that's awesome because so many people are constantly, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how to. I've tried to do it, and it's, you know, 3D rendering. I mean, it's not complicated, but it's difficult.
Yeah. Well, those were the pasty patterns from my class, and then actually Johnny Pork Pie made them printable.
No?
Yeah, because they were kind of messy. So my publisher said no, and so he made the pictures look better.
Very nice. Because
he did a lot of graphic stuff to the book.
I actually, my ex-husband had a thing called 10 Quick Steps, and I actually wrote 10 Quick Steps to Pasty Making, and that was the hardest part. And now I've seen yours, and I'm like, screw it, I'm not going to finish the book. They were PDFs.
Well,
so I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but yeah.
That method of pasty making is one that I invented, and I'm always confident that there's other methods that work just as well, but this one works,
you know?
It's
simplistic and it's easy, and that's what matters, because it's like, the more complicated you want to get, great. On the second book, then we can get more complicated. This book, not only I think is a must read by every burlesque performer that ever dances on stage or strippers.
I love you, Lily. You're my best friend.
I don't blow smoke up people's asses.
I know you don't.
I don't.
I'm so excited.
Trust me, I know my reputation. She speaks her mind, and if you don't like it, you don't, you know, whatever. But when something is good, it deserves to get as much press and as much PR as possible. And again, I say it all the time, you can be beautiful, you can be smart, you can be empowered, but if you don't have the talent to back it up, you're always going to be a chorus girl. And yes, thank God we need chorus girls too. We can't all be headliners.
Well, it's even that. Like, if someone has a message and they don't bother to learn the skill to communicate it,
yes.
That frustrates
me. Yes.
I was like, I'm sure you have an important political message, and I actually want to hear it, but I can't hear a thing you're saying through your ego. You have to learn to perform.
Yeah.
You have to learn to, and performance is communication.
Absolutely.
There's a little ego stroking here because I know we do have to get on with
it. If I could get some ego stroking, I'm never leaving.
Yeah, you're here.
You know I'm a Leo.
Oh, okay. You're here in the burlesque studio, right? Mm-hmm. Can we speak with Godzilla?
Godzilla.
That is one of the creepiest, most beautiful things I have ever seen. Seriously.
I'm afraid Godzilla is in New York, but do you have any questions specifically you want to convey to Godzilla?
I know.
Can we put them in writing and then we'll do a
dramatic
reading?
You know what we've been trying to do for so long? I talked to Murasaki Baby Doll. We've been trying to do a number with them and Godzilla together. It was actually Arrow Chica's idea.
Allow me to raise my chin off the floor.
Right? Wouldn't that be fun? Where they conquer Godzilla.
And Violet just came up to me this morning and said that one of them wants to go to be a part of Burlesque Land next.
What's Burlesque Land?
That's our little annual thing where it's our 2 days of Disney themed burlesque.
Oh yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Oh,
yeah.
You've seen my
yeah, totally.
We have so much fun. And that bringing in pop culture. I mean, you know, that right there is, you know, the epitome.
And not
of
getting
it.
Sued because and I read Mad Magazine.
We work really hard not to get sued. I have to tell you.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people in burlesque think that, well, people don't know any better and they don't understand. People don't learn about copyright or trademark at all. They don't realize it can apply to them.
One of the interesting things is not only do we have the spectacle that is Miss Exotic World, which is, to me, it's the Academy Awards of burlesque. Yes, we have classes here. Yes, we have vendors here. But basically, this is about coming together with your peers and respecting and loving and sometimes dissing.
Well, for me, it's Friday night, honestly. That really blows me away. But Saturday, I'm excited about that all year round to see the pageant.
It is, you know, Astrid said it last night. It's, you know, isn't it ironic that this great feminist thing has a competition?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel if there isn't a competition, we don't force ourselves to become better performers.
The bar has been raised so much in the past few years. Like, you know, because I've been working on the... Yeah, it's sparkly, but just like the way that Roxy's music was edited, that is a lot of work. That is raising the bar on just the music that you use in your number. That was one of the most, I mean, and Roxy's always impressive, but that was one of the most impressive things to me about her number was the music was so unique. It was edited to suit the number, and she performed specifically to the music, and the feel of the entire piece related to the music. The way that music came across in that piece to me was spectacular. That raised the bar on the way everybody should use music.
I often talk to new people. I don't teach. I kind of consult, if that makes sense. What I say is, here's what you're doing. Here's my opinion for X amount of dollars. Take what you will with it. And here's what I have to back that up. And if you don't want to use it, don't use it. Because there is no right or wrong. There is only, do people like it? That, you know, you can do something beautifully and no one like it, but it doesn't matter. It's still beautiful.
That's one of the things I'm just
and
now
Christina's
starting to get.
My biggest thing, though, is music, understanding music. If you are dancing in 2-4 and your music is 4-4, it doesn't always work. If you are dancing in 4-4 and your music is 2-4, it doesn't always work.
Well, a lot of people aren't dancing, though. They're miming. Or they're doing pantomime, which is nice, too. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but...
One of the things that struck me... just right across the face because I didn't realize it until I read it and went, oh my God, the Merry Melodies.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. I have a little bit of a Bugs Bunny problem.
It's not just that. You described how the cartoons are drawn and the music is incorporated with it in a way that to me is the definition of burlesque.
When the choreography.
Your choreography and your music have to tie together because the music is the emotion in your ears, the visual is what you're doing, and if those two don't match, your senses don't, it doesn't come across.
Well, I'm obsessed with this idea of the choreography of events where it's not just a dance move but an event. Like at this point, I pull out my prop. So at the same point, during the same phrase in the music, every single time I perform this number, this is where I take out my prop, assuming all else is well.
Right.
And that's why I say it's like pantomime, but I call it a choreography of events because it is a form of dance. So a lot of that I learned from watching cartoons. If you watch Merry Melodies, you know, at this point there will be a horn will play and a door will open, you know, and it's an event. And it's timing. It's about timing, and it's about sharing the experience of hearing the music with the viewer. Because if you're too far off the music, if you're just playing out the lyrics and not identifying with the beat, then the audience doesn't have the same tactile sense that you're doing the same thing.
I did that.
You're hearing the same music.
That act with Ava, that was all based on Betty Boop.
Absolutely. The whole thing was, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
I played a French painter and the entire time. I'm like,
well, I'm working on
bouncing to the beat.
I'm working on a musical project I'm working on several musical projects. One is, we're going through the sheet music that the legends used and creating displays based on those.
Oh, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, and talking to the musicians who did burlesque. And a lot of this has been done without me. Other people started this work, and I'm trying to bring it into one thing. And then the other thing that I'm doing is I'm trying to put together adult live action Merry Melodies with musicians doing original music. So I've been talking to Benjamin Ickes in New York, who has this amazing project called the Ambitious Orchestra, and Skip Shari, who does, he uses things that aren't instruments as instruments, like bowls with marbles in them. He also modifies instruments, so he calls monster instruments. It's amazing.
Very cool.
We're doing live versions of Merry Melodies type inspired. So they look like Merry Melodies, and we want to do some of them in black and white.
Oh, I
so we'll be performing in black and
amazing.
White.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So it kind of goes beyond, we're raising, but also that goes to where we didn't originally come into burlesque through burlesque. There wasn't a burlesque scene. We came in through other kinds of performance and imaginary scenarios that we wanted to create. So I think that for a lot of people who've been in burlesque for a long time, in some ways they're going back to where they were before, like back to drag. Like I'm more focused on my sex work activism now, and Julie is doing more of her performance art, and some people who did theater are doing more theater with the added the added dimension of burlesque. So it's been really incredible. And I like keeping the striptease element, the adult element in it. I think that's really incredible. And watching the show last night, I was so impressed by the imagination in even the most classic numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Even the pure striptease, like Midnight Martini. That was a pure striptease.
Amazing,
but
yeah.
That's the thing. Like striptease alone can be very imaginative and creative and innovative. Just taking off clothes, even if it's a regular old article of clothing.
Which is in the book.
That's right. Well, it's my obsession. My original obsession was always striptease. Always. It wasn't costuming. It wasn't theater. It wasn't anything but the stripping itself. The idea that taking off an article of clothing is an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah.
So I originate from striptease. So when people talk about burlesque that isn't about striptease, I'm like, that's awesome. I bet I would enjoy it, but I could not be obsessed with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm obsessed right now with you. I think I'm your biggest stalker. seriously, I hate that there's a coast between us, because I really feel I would love to be a sponge next to you. And
thank you, Lily. Yeah. And I'm a big fan. These podcasts are a huge resource. My students talk about them all the time, by the way.
Thank you so very much. I'm sad that we had to take as much time off as we did. But sometimes, unfortunately, life interferes with the things you love. And I don't do this for money. It's free. And although I'm about to do a sponsorship, I don't do this for money. It is free. And so it is one of those things that we do as often as we possibly can. And being able to take advantage of having your time here and you giving us your time. Thank you so much.
I'm honored.
Also, if you don't know about it, Jo is actually coming to Los Angeles. She is doing a class. I don't know if it's sold out or not. I'm going to assume it is.
I'm already recommending.
Head over to itsachick.com. It is going to be amazing, because it is a private residence. It is an intimate time.
I'm very excited.
And again, it's one of those things where when you have the opportunity to spend 5 minutes with someone that is an inspiration to you, you will get years of knowledge out of that. And, you may say $75 to go take Baby Caramella's class. I just don't have it. Find it.
Find it, yeah.
Seriously, cut back your cigarette intake. Say, I'm only going to have one mocha this week. Do whatever it is to find that extra income to spend the time and, volunteer to be a legend liaison next year. Do whatever it takes to be able to spend some time with these women, because they won't be around forever. And yes, I mean, you've worked with many legends now. You have your own act that was actually blessed by...
Sherry Britton coached me on an act, and
And, you know, having that and knowing that the next generation is going to have that coming from you, it may be second generation, well, but it's still so tied to the source. It's amazing.
Well, a lot of my interest in interviewing these women came about because they were being interviewed by the Velvet Hammer. There were great interviews on the Velvet Hammer site and also a magazine called Tease,
mm-hmm.
which was edited by Torchy Taboo and produced by Greg Theakston.
Have we talked about that a little bit?
Yeah. And so... I was inspired by that. I was like, oh, they're around. We can actually talk to them. And that's why I want people to come here and be able to take classes from them. We try to keep the classes small. So
Amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
I'll have my book in L.A.
Yes, yes.
The book party is in Manhattan Beach, sadly.
That's not sad at all. Where exactly is
because
it?
Because that's when the books get in. But I'll have some books at the symposium, but I'll have...
Is there a public event though at the Manhattan Beach? I mean,
yeah. Do you want me to talk about it?
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
So okay. There is a public event in Manhattan Beach. It's on my Facebook at the Upper Manhattan Lounge on the 9th from 5 to 9. With we're going to do a makeup demo, the burlesque makeup demo, and a tassel twirling demo.
Oh,
and
so
the
excited.
Book will be available for purchase and signing at that event. And my sister put it together, and my mom is coming.
I love that.
My mom has never seen me. Well, she still won't be seeing me strip exactly, but my mom was so not into me being a stripper, but she's really happy for me that I found a passion. And
absolutely.
So I'm excited for her to come and see, you know, other people be interested in it and see what that's like. So my mom will be there. Come say hi to my mom. She's really cute. And my sister put together this entire event. Yeah.
That's fabulous.
So I have the Striptease Symposium where I'm actually going to get to teach. And I'm excited that you guys put that together so last minute because my travel.
Penny Starr Jr. and Jewel
Penny
of Denial. I've worked with them by bringing Angel out, but those two are amazing. They have an incredible school. Mm-hmm. I recommend to everybody that they take the basics class from them.
And I always try to get people to go to itsachick.com to buy the Velvet Hammer documentary and get a gander at that.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a Chick is a great place. Your Facebook is facebook.com/
Joe Weldon.
Joe Weldon.
And the website is schoolofburlesque.com.
Schoolofburlesque.com. Joe, thank you for spending this time
thank
with
you so
us.
Much.
My pleasure.
Again, it's an honor and a pleasure to be able to say, wow, I know this person.
Because
when shit like this comes out,
it is a
must read, not only for the burlesque performer, but if you are a fan of burlesque, this is a beautiful insight into both the past and the neo-burlesque scene in New York especially, but it is a beautiful peek into that whole thing.
Just to see this come out after, I mean, I think it was a couple of years ago you were talking about it with me.
Yeah.
And you're even talking about the shape.
I was obsessed with the shape of the book, and I can't believe that they've done so many things that I requested with the book.
It's the Burlesque Handbook. It is available on Amazon.com as well. The book signing is at the Upper Manhattan.
Upper Manhattan Lounge, yeah. Manhattan
yeah, you
Beach.
Had one in New York. Do you have any other ones planned throughout the year right now? Just
I'm mostly doing festivals. They can check schoolofburlesque.com. We had some tour support fall through, so a lot of dates changed, so we're rescheduling everything.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for being with us, Chris. Thank you, as always. And I want to tell you that this is brought to you by www.badattitude.com. The
Yay.
Bad Attitude Boutique. She's the corset store. If you don't know Touchelle, you should. They have 47 different styles of corsets. And I just saw the new line that she brought out. And let me tell you right now, from a little chubby, tubby, tummy girl, I got 4 inches off and I could breathe.
Love
the
it.
Cut is
nothing like a corset.
Amazing. I just, you know, it's like I have so many friends that say, I've tried this corset on and I've tried that corset on and none of them seem to work. And I love you, Leg Avenue, but you do not make burlesque costumes. Mm. you make basic pieces that can be used for dancing.
They can be used as a base for a costume.
Yes. Investing in a good corset is extremely important. So head over to badattitude.com, see what she has. She's also going to be vending at a couple events coming up, and we'll be talking about those for you as well. So from the Burlesque Hall of Fame, we're going to sign off for this one, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Joe.